Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, today, we're going to be unveiling the untold stories of mother-daughter trauma and so much more. Joining us is nationally renowned psychologist and author of 5 published books, Sassy and Rude, her newest one, which is her new attitude, Don't Call Me a Drama Queen, Dump That Chump, Your Boss Is Not Your Mother, and Healing the Sensitive Heart. Dr. Deborah Mandel, a.k.a. The Love Wire, has over 30 years experience specializing in helping individuals, couples, and families learn how to thrive in their relationships. Now, if Dr. Deborah's name sounds familiar, it's no wonder. She's appeared on hundreds of national TV and radio shows, including Raising Sextuplets, which I didn't see that one, but I have seen a few of them, Love Handles, Tyra Banks, The Today Show, The Early Show, and she's been regularly featured expert on CNN Headline News, The O'Reilly Factory, and Inside Edition, and is frequently sought out by journalists and reporters for expertise in numerous areas. And she also co-hosted her own radio show on this same network, the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. And she, during that time, she was accumulated over 1 million listeners. So I am so thankful to have her on here. So Dr. Deborah, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you. I think we should just stop here. That sounded so impressive. I don't think I even want to open my mouth after that.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that I was thinking about it. And I said, first of all, I can't believe that you haven't been on the show before, because there's so many great subjects. It's such a great fit. But I love the fact that we're starting with now with your latest book, Sassy and Rude, Her New Attitude. So let's talk about that one. But at the same time, we've already have some listener questions that have come in, which I think is great. But there's some of the other things I'd love to touch on too, and things that we can talk about, things that are going on today. But starting with Sassy and Rude, let's start with, how'd you name it? Oh, did I lose you?
We're having a little technical. This is a very big learning experience for me, all this technology. So when I was doing the show on LA Talk Radio, we just did the audio. So this whole video thing is new. So I just lost a moment of your last bit.
Okay. Yeah. And I think, yeah, you got muted for a moment or something. But anyway, so what I was saying is that as much as I'd like to talk about a lot of different things, let's start with your new book, Sassy and Rude, Her New Attitude. And let's start with, how'd you come up with that name?
Well, can I tell you the original title?
Please.
Why Is She Such a Bitch?
And who recommended you change it?
The publisher did not want that. It was a Spanish publisher with their first year of imprinting in the U.S. And they just said, no, the editor loved it, was very excited about the title. I wrote this proposal for this book about 13 years ago.
Wow.
And I'll tell you a little funny story about this. So 2 years ago, I was in the hospital for mm-hmm. a paper cut that went rogue, literally went rogue. Like my hand swelled up like a baseball mitt.
Wow.
And I'm allergic to all kinds of antibiotics. So it was just it was a horrible moment. I'm in the hospital bed with hooked mm-hmm. up in these IVs with antibiotics and all this stuff. And I get a email from my agent, who I hadn't talked to for years because it's a long time since I've had a published book. And she says, I have a publisher interested in your book proposal. Why is she such a bitch from like 13 years ago? I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? Well, blessings come when you're in the hospital. I'm thinking I'm going to die from sepsis. And here we are. Okay, great. So that's how it went off and running. But I did write this book the proposal a long time ago when I was having a struggle with my own daughter. So I don't know where you want to start, but I can get into a little bit of my own history. And you
absolutely. Well, no, that's exactly where I was going to go is, and I didn't know that it was 13 years ago, but in some of the things that I had researched myself that, you know, there is some examples that you have from your own life. So let's start with sharing those things.
Yeah. So my parents were both immigrants. My father was from Poland and a Holocaust survivor. My mother was from Estonia, and she Estonia became part of Russia, and they left there and went to Sweden, and my mom made it to Canada. My mom was much younger than my father. They did marry in Canada, and when they came to the States, the joke was they spoke 11 languages between the two of them, but none of them English. So it was that kind of family, right? They were struggling. They were trying to make do. My father ended up basically starting car wash businesses and made a great success for himself. I think my mom was a little bit thwarted in her life. She was a model in Canada, a very beautiful woman, very stoic, smart, very stubborn. I take some of that from her. And she was a young mom, and I don't know that she really wanted to have that role in her life, quite frankly. I think she gave up a lot to be a mom, and I think she had a lot of resentment and anger, and it just wasn't something that you would talk about at that time. So when they decided to have children, she just raised us with a very heavy hand. She was very strict. She was very loving in her heart, but it didn't feel very loved. You know, it was one of those where you get A's, why are they not A pluses? Did you clean your room? It's not perfect enough. You leave a glass on the table. Oh my goodness. You're going to the bathroom. The glass is gone. And then you're punished because you left the glass on the table, that kind of thing. So I did not feel very loved. And I was one of those super sensitive little girls where I wanted the cuddles. I wanted the hugs. I wanted the contact. I wanted, you know, to kind of like snuggle up in my mom's arms, but she just wasn't that kind of mom. So it was tough for me. And at that time I said, oh, if I'm going to have kids, I am definitely going to do the opposite, which is a mistake that many parents make, is I'm going to do the pendulum swing. I'm going to go completely the opposite of what I got. So that's kind of how it all started. It really inspired me. My mom died very young. She was only 58. And so I was just barely had my own daughter at that time. So she never got to be a grandma to my child. And we missed out on a lot. And in the last of her final days, she was angry with me because I was actually trying to get her help. I was already a psychologist. I wanted to help her to help herself so that she would feel better about life and herself. And she was angry about that. So her final words to me were not very kind. And it really touched my heart and hurt me. Now you get a word in edgewise. Sorry.
Yes. No. I there's so many thoughts going through my mind, but it sounds like what you're kind of leading up to is that you found yourself in the too nice mom syndrome, and how did that contribute to your own communication breakdowns between yourself and your daughter?
Yeah. So that's a great question, because what often happens when we have that experience where maybe we had our own childhood wounds and we try to heal them and we do the best we can, and we can get into that some more as well, because that's really important, is that we oftentimes pass along to our children this idea that I'm going to do it so much differently, this pendulum swing, and I'm going to give her endless amounts of love. You know, that whole concept of you're sitting up with your daughter until the wee hours of the night because she's having a tough time with sleeping. Or later on in middle school, she's having a problem with her friend and she's up all night and she can't sleep and she wants to talk. So I'm that mom. I'm just there. And I figured this is a great concept. And yet sometimes they don't really appreciate it. They take it for granted. They become a little bit entitled, that original title, why such a bitch? Not that she's really a bitch, but this idea of Hello, wait a second. You're rude. Oh, you asked me originally, how did I come up with the title Sassy and Rude? I had like 24 hours to change the title. So I was like, well, Sassy and Rude, her new attitude. It rhymes. I like it. And it's fitting. So this idea of let's do everything that we didn't get. I'm going to be the too nice mom. I'm going to do it all. I'm going to have almost no boundaries because I want her to feel this appreciation and love and admiration that I didn't feel. And that's what a lot of moms get stuck in that trap.
Well, and it's a great point because when you start doing everything for them, they don't necessarily learn to do things for themselves. And, you know, there's this balance that I know that we need to have. Mm-hmm. And in fact, and I spent a lot of time working with teenagers, at-risk youth, and I would speak to the parents, and the parents would start telling me everything that they were doing. And one of the things I recognized was that many of them felt embarrassed even having to share what it was they were sharing with me. And one of the things I used to tell them was, you know, I'd love to tell you that I have all the answers, but you probably would have a better chance at getting my 4-year-old to go to sleep right now, because I, you know, they ask for a glass of water, they ask for, you know, a glass of milk. Can you rub my back? Can you read me another story? And, you know, and they're your child, so you want to do all of these things for them. And so, I think there's kind of a similarity to this is that you want to help them, you think that you're helping them. But as you said, there needs to be a balance.
Yeah, and that's the key is that we think by helping them, by doing everything for them, that they're going to not feel any pain. And the one thing that I really realized from my own childhood and then as a mom is that actually having pain and disappointment is part of life, and learning how to deal with that is so critical to developing resilience and the ability to cope in the world. And so we do our kids a disservice. And I know we're focused on moms and daughters, but I also want to say, just as parents, just mm-hmm. when we want to protect our children from everything, you know, that's helicopter parenting, hovering around them, making sure that they don't suffer in any way, they suffer more later on because when they have to hit that cruel, hard world out there and all those messages that they're faced with and all the rude people and disrespectful people and angry people, resentful people, caustic people, then they don't know how to deal with it. So actually that element of suffering, a little bit of pain, experiencing that is really critical for development, healthy development. And I love that you work with at-risk kids. That's how I started my career, is I worked with children who had been removed from the homes from sexual abuse, physical abuse, drug addiction, with their parents. And I remember this one kid, I can't say his name, but he was this super sweet little guy. And he was in my office and he's telling me his story and I'm crying. And he says, Dr. Deborah, how am I going to get any help from you if you're the one who's crying? And I said, oh my gosh, such a blessing. I said, I've got to go back to the drawing board. I got to figure this out. I got to learn how to have boundaries so that I can hear your pain and understand that empathy is really not about living in someone else's pain. It's being able to drop into that experience so that you can sit with it for a moment and share that with the other person, but also have your own self and your own experience and not have to live that with them. But I'll never forget that moment because it really took me by surprise. And I said, this kid is brilliant. He's right.
Exactly. I love that. And it actually touches on another point. And it was one of the things that we used to be able to bond with young people like that, is they would say something brilliant like that, but then they would follow it with, but you probably don't believe me because everybody says that I lie, or everybody says that I do this, or everybody says that I do that. And I'd say, well, actually, I don't think that, because have you lied to me? And they'd go, well, no. And I go, then why would I think that? And to be able to go in, you know, to where they went, oh, they don't have a preconceived notion. That was something that was always helpful. Or if they talked about their experiences of, well, you know, I know because I do all of these things that the school says I'm this or they say I'm that. And I go, well, you know, sometimes that's one of the problems. Sometimes when you are so intelligent that you're operating outside the bubble that they would like you in. And I don't see that. So let's let you express exactly what it is you want to. And all of a sudden, they realized that the differences that they had made them intelligent or made them outside the bubble, not necessarily deficient. Anyway, as you were saying that, that was the picture that I was getting of this young man.
Yeah. And isn't that a beautiful thing, right? When we can kind of supply a blank canvas for someone and to be able to paint from there as opposed to a preconceived notion. And that's the beauty of parenting. That's so important for people to realize is that we really do start. I know we have genetics and that plays a big role in what happens, but we also get to play with that genetics in a way that we can really allow our children to flourish. But one of the key elements is giving, but also setting boundaries. And that's what this book really tries to set the ground for, is that we want to create a healing tree between moms and daughters. We want to be able to take some of those old wounds that created a canvas that wasn't so pretty and be able to turn it into a new painting, be able to create something that's new and beautiful in the present and in the now.
Well, we have a question that's coming in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to send in questions, many of which are come from teachers or people that are working in the middle of the day. So they'll send them in either before the show or sometimes even the night before. This one reads, as a mother of two grown daughters with very different mindsets, the older one has started a family of her own and seems only interested in her new family and doesn't return calls from her younger sister that she was once so close with. My younger daughter expresses her hurt to me, and then she has in parentheses, as if I should be able to fix it. I don't know how to help. And it's from Frustrated in Highland Park, Illinois.
Well, thank you, Frustrated in Highland Park, Illinois. I'm so grateful when people write in and have questions. It's amazing. Well, I feel for you. I don't know the ages of the children, but I'm going to guess that they're probably well into their 20s, maybe even 30s. So yeah, new family. My guess is that the older one is probably holding on to some resentments and wants to kind of have a fresh start. Maybe doesn't want the influence of the family dynamic that was there before. That doesn't mean that it was bad. It just means that there's probably some unhealed wounds there. So I think this book can be really helpful. The sassy and rude concept is that there is an approach and many, many different avenues that one can take to be able to try to build that, to create that olive branch, to extend that olive branch. Now, for the younger daughter, the sister, that's a tough role for the mom, because moms will often want to be the mediator between siblings. But unfortunately, that creates what we call triangulation. And then you're having relationships with the other through another person. And that doesn't usually go so well. So my advice in terms of what to say to the younger daughter is, I would love to be able to fix it, but I really can't. But maybe together we could approach your sister and maybe either offer some therapy as a potential, or a forum where we could talk about the things that are bothersome, the things that have not been discussed in our family. What are those skeletons in the closet that people often don't want to address? We have this saying in grief is time heals all wounds. And I believe that's a crock, quite frankly, because time can help heal wounds, but it's what do we do in that time? So when we decide that just because, oh, it's been 10 years since that happened, or 20 years, that's long ago, it's forgotten. No, not usually. Usually there are some remnants, those little gremlins that are still sitting inside that are wreaking havoc because we haven't really done the process to do the healing. So one thing that's really critical in the healing process is to try to take ownership, responsibility, and accountability for those things which we believe we have done in our experience in relationships that may have had a harmful effect. And we do that without shame, without blame, without pointing fingers, but with this idea that we can really be accountable for the ways in which we may have wounded another person, and that we can apply this to all relationships, not just mother-daughter relationships. But I really appreciate that question, because I think it's a very common scenario.
Yeah. And I love the fact that you brought up the triangulation problem, because again, as I read it, I was thinking you're actually being thrown two questions at once because mm-hmm. you have the one part of the question, but the other part is that the mother is in a very difficult situation because of the triangulation. So I'm so glad that you did that. And I think those of us that are, you know, helper bees, or, you know, we want to be able to fix things, especially when it's our children, it becomes a very difficult thing when one is asking you essentially to step in and help and the other one isn't. Very, very difficult situation. And I agree that I think, you know, not only reading the book, but maybe one of those things that get them the book, book, let them read it themselves.
I do hope that it goes both ways. I actually had at one point thought about doing it as a flip book, where one side was for moms and one side was for daughters, but it became very complicated to write it that way. Maybe someday I'll do that. But I also want to say something to the mom, mm-hmm. is that she has an opportunity to build something really special with the younger daughter, and not as an alienation of the older daughter, but sometimes adult children just aren't ready to do the healing process. And if the older daughter is consumed with her own nuclear family that she's developing now, and that's where she wants to give her focus, she may not be open to any of the things that I'm suggesting. But the younger daughter is ripe and ready. She wants that relationship with her mom. So they get to actually build something really special. So sometimes we can use, let's call it turning chicken shit into chicken salad. We get to actually take a moment with something that isn't so good, but turn it into something. I know people say lemons into lemonade, but that sounds boring to me. Yeah. Something more profound. So I think that is it's an opening. It's a window to be able to have that dialogue, that communication that maybe wouldn't have been there if everything were hunky dory with the three of them.
Well, and again, I love that, because essentially, you know, you're seizing an opportunity. What you're saying is seize the opportunity and fill the void.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes, yes. So it's a really rich moment for the mom to be able to actually try many of these things in the book. I have sugar and spice exercises, because one of the goals of this book is to bring back a little of that sugar and spice. And maybe, just maybe, if the older daughter sees that the younger daughter and mom have this really cool relationship that's developing, she may want in on it a little bit as well. But again, I don't know the scenario. I don't know the situation. I know this happens in many families. Sometimes people just want to move in a different direction. Sometimes they come around and sometimes they don't. But at least she's got another one that she can work with to make something really special. So thanks for that question.
Well, you started to share a little bit about the, you know, the sugar and spice part. So why don't you share, you know, sort of a sneak peek into, you know, the three-step plan that you outline in the book for that really focuses on healing broken bonds.
Well, I think what's really critical in this arena is that the most important things is that we take responsibility for our own experience and our own childhood, our own wounds. We need to really heal those. We need to understand what those are through self-compassion, no blame, no shame, really just taking a deep, dark look at what it is that we carried forward in our own mothering that came from our ways in which that we were mothered, and the ways that that worked and the ways that it didn't work, and what we may have done in our parental relationship with our child that maybe didn't work. So that responsibility is really key, owning that. And then we want to see what we can do to invite our daughter in to have a healing experience with us. And mm-hmm. through that process, we are making amends. We are doing the best we can to show that we have acknowledgement and ownership of that which we did that may have been hurtful or harmful. And again, we also have to understand intentions, because our intentions are often very good. And sometimes we just say, well, my intentions were good. Well, why wasn't it seen that way? Why wasn't it met that way? But that's, we cannot view or read intentions. They are deep within us that we know, but other people don't know that. So we can have the best of intentions. For example, if I accidentally slammed the door on your finger when you're leaving my office, I didn't mean to. Maybe I was preoccupied and I was answering a call, But if you have to go to the ER because you have a swollen finger, well, by golly, you don't care about my intentions at that moment. You have to heal the hurt, right? So we have to then take our responsibility, extend that to our daughter, and then also make amends. And make amends is also about asking for forgiveness. Forgiveness is a really key feature here too, because a lot of people think just forgive someone, but forgiveness, I think, is a much more active approach. We have to ask for forgiveness about something because we have to acknowledge that which we want forgiveness for.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great point. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you for some advice for the mothers dealing with, and I'm going to use your term, sassy daughters and vice versa. So when we come back, we're going to address that subject. So for everybody out there, you're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We're talking with Dr. Deborah Mandel, and we're talking about her new book, Sassy and Rude, Her New Attitude. So Dr. Deborah, when we went to break, the questions, what advice would you give, the mothers that are dealing with it, again, your term, sassy daughters, and vice versa?
Great. Thank you. So one of the fun parts of the book is I have a sassy and rude quotient in there. So you can actually take the questionnaire, to do the questionnaire. It's like a little quiz of, how sassy is your daughter? Just how rude is she? Right? Because we have the mild version of, you talk to your daughter and she kind of rolls her eyes and she's like, mom, stop that. But you're still engaged and you're still connected and you're just having your thing, but she can be a little sassy. Right. And then we have those, maybe even like this mom who wrote in, whose daughter doesn't want to have anything to do with her. And that's not necessarily being actively sassy and rude, but that's kind of the deepest wound of all is disconnection. Yeah. I don't even want to have a relationship with you. So we have a huge variance in terms of what that means. So let's just go with the sort of more average range where we have, moms and daughters who, daughter's grown up, she's done her, let me just segue a little bit into the separation individuation process, because I think that's really critical to understanding this.
Sure.
All children and their parents do this process developmentally called separation and individuation, where we recognize very early on that we are a separate being. We're no longer attached to the womb. We're not part of that umbilical cord. We are a separate being. That little baby who's screaming for food recognizes, wait a minute, I'm not part of mommy anymore. But when mom's there or daddy's there giving the bottle or giving the breast, well, dads can't give the breast, but maybe they can in some way, or moms, whatever the compilation is of the family system, there is this sense of connection. But as we grow up, we learn that we're also an individual. We are a separate identity from our parents. Sometimes that's a huge contrast and we go the opposite. Many call it adolescent rebellion because we're trying to really pull away in very, very deep ways. But for many moms and daughters, because they are the same gender, there's a connection that's very similar. So the individuation process is sometimes a little bit more complicated. So that sassy and rude component is is for everyone, right? I mean, there is a sassy and rude component that's just going to happen. And in fact, if it hasn't happened, I would say, beware, it's going to happen sometime. It may be delayed, but at some point or another, it's a daughter's purpose to push away to some degree. So if we're too enmeshed or too close, that's going to also be problematic. So the advice is you want to recognize what is the level of sassiness and rudeness that you're dealing with. If it's kind of mild, you're going to have a much easier go. If it's very severe, you're going to have much more to do. But the basic premise is that, again, in that idea of what is the healing process, we want to take accountability for ourselves. We want to really learn what we have control over and what we don't. Because a lot of times we believe, you know, you could be at a restaurant with your intimate partner and he or she behaves in an obnoxious way. And a friend says, how can you let he or she behave that way? And you say, I don't have any control over that person. They're their own person, right? So even with our children, while we have influence over them, we don't have full control. We can control our younger ones because we can corral them back in the house. We can put them in their room for time out. We can take away certain things. We're influencing though. We ultimately cannot control somebody else's thoughts, feelings, reactions to things, only our own. So we want to be really responsible. So that's a really key step in this process, is really owning that which you can own. And then you want to do your best to make amends. You want to really put out there, hey, look, you know what? When you were 15, I did this and I'm not proud of that. And I'm sorry for that. You know, just put it out there. Also, I have exercises in the books where there's ways in which you can communicate with your daughter via email or text or even a phone call, whatever suits you at this point in life. And be able to ask questions. One of the things that I did with my daughter, and I asked her and several other reasonably young women in their, you know, 18 to 30 or 35, what are these things that you really admire about your mom? What are the things you wish that she had not done, wish that she had changed? What qualities do you really wish would never change? How she hurt you? There's these questions that are very, you know this from working with high-risk youth. You don't want to ask yes or no questions. You want to ask questions that give them the forum to be able to really express themselves. Did you like that? Yes or no? Tell me what you liked about that.
Exactly.
Tell me what you didn't like about that. Did that hurt you? Tell me how that hurt you.
No, and I think that's such a great point. And I'm proud to say that it was the way in which I raised my boys. But it was, you know, it wasn't how was school today. It was, what was the most interesting thing about school? And then the next day it might be, what was the most exciting thing about school? You know, just there always something to where you can't do yes or no. And I agree. And it makes perfect sense in these situations as well, you know, to help if you're trying to help, you know, create a better bond or heal a bond or anything else. It makes perfect sense.
Some listeners, viewers will be saying to themselves, yeah, but I do that. And I still get the one word answer. I still get the, I don't know, or I don't care, or something like that. Then you probably have a deeper wound going on, and being open to saying, hey, you know what? I really want to have our relationship get better. I'd really love to have open communication. Please take some time and think about what you think would make that better. And give that onus, if you will, give that responsibility to your adult child, to your adult daughter, to say, tell me what you would like. Tell me how I can do better. Because when you give that openness, it usually melts someone's heart, right? You just know this in most of your relationships. When you're open that way, unless you're with a sociopath, which we hope that's not the case, then most people are going to soften and want to give something to you.
And that's perfect. And it's almost as if you're reading my mind, because one of my thoughts was that, you know, to share some of the exercises. So for everybody out there, these are solution-oriented tools and exercises that are in the book, what she's telling you right now. So I think that's great. One of the things that if I get more comments on this show than anything else, it is people that say their favorite part is memorable stories. So if you can share like one of your favorite memorable success stories where your guidance led to a significant positive change in a mother-daughter relationship.
Absolutely. And I have to be very careful because even in the book, I do use real life stories, but I change them up a bunch of identifying information because of confidentiality. So I'm going to be really careful here also on air just to say that there's one that comes to mind and I can just see them in my office right now. And, what do we even call middle age these days? What is middle age? So 50s.
I can tell you what middle age is. It's a number that keeps moving larger as I get older.
Perfect. Okay. So I won't even qualify it. I'll just say this woman in her 50s and her daughter in her 30s, and daughter actually had to move back home. So there was a period of time where they lived separate and their relationship did pretty well. But when she had to move back home, you know, what hit the fan. There was a lot of turmoil. This is a single mom and very active, you know, loves nature and very interested in energetics and doing all kinds of healing things. And the daughter was a little bit more conservative, more kind of trying to figure out what she wanted to do in life. And they would bump heads a lot because the mom was all about I do some fun little labels of moms in the book, like friendly Frida, perfectionistic Pia. So I have these little categories that people can relate to about, well, what kind of mom, what kind of too nice mom am I? So she was the friendly Frida type, just wanted to be in her daughter's business all the time. And the daughter was like, hello, mom, I love you, but can you step back? So our work together was really about learning how to set very respectful boundaries. Now, the daughter was passive aggressive. So she would say she would do things and didn't do them because this was her way of expressing her discontent with her mom. They were trapped in this dynamic where the mom was, you know, come on, let's go do this, get that done. And then we can go do this and do this fun stuff. And always kind of like almost bribing so that we could have all this play time together. And the daughter was like, I don't really want all that play time with mom. I want to have play time with my friends or do other things. So it was too intrusive. So we had to work on how to set appropriate boundaries that were fitting for her now as an adult woman, right? The daughter's an adult woman. She's not 12. And how to be able to communicate with each other where they could really share what their needs were, be respectful, and work on those hurt feelings. Because the mom would feel like if the daughter didn't want to spend time with her, that she was a bad mom or that she wasn't loved. And it wasn't true at all. The daughter adored her and loved her and thought she was amazing, but she didn't want to be her. She wanted to have her own identity. So it was that process of really learning how to communicate. And one of my favorite exercises in the book is the convo redo. It's a conversation redo where you have a situation where you have an upset and it goes awry. And then you both reflect and you think back on how can we rechange that conversation where it's going to go better, where I'm respectful, empathetic, understanding, forgiving, and aware of my own self. And so I love that. And by the way, you can take that to the bank with any relationship because couples do this all the time too. Convo redos are really magnificent. It really allows you to have a healing experience instead of just, oh, okay, whatever, we'll just forget about that and move on. You can really heal during that time.
I love it. The book is called Sassy and Rude, Her New Attitude. We're talking with Dr. Deborah Mandel. And we have a question that's coming in, but we're going to take a break. But when we come back, this comes in from someone who's talking about having recently gone through a divorce and how that's affected her relationship with her daughter. So for everybody out there, you're listening to or watching Answers Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. Westshield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. Westshield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. Westshield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step. And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. We are talking with Dr. Deborah Mandel, and we are talking about mother-daughter relationships. And the question that came in right before the break is, having recently gone through a divorce from her father, my relationship with my adult daughter has changed drastically. Having been very close before the divorce, she now paints her father as a victim and only allows me to see the grandchildren when she is in need of a break. I've avoided saying anything bad about her father, and she doesn't seem to know or remember the verbal and mental abuse I took for many years before she graduated and set out to form a life of her own. How do I rekindle our close relationship without sharing information about her father that will make her sad and or hurt her relationship with him? And this is from Catherine in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, dear Catherine, my heart just melts for you. That's such a difficult situation. Also, having been a single mom, my daughter's dad and I separated when she was just an infant, actually. So we had a long road of that. It sounds like, Catherine, this is a more recent experience. It's a really sensitive area. There's a chapter in the book that really is about some things are better left unsaid. How much to tell, how much not to tell about everything, but your own history, your own past, your relationships, etc. In this kind of situation, I don't know exactly how old, she didn't say how old her daughter is, but I'm going to assume she's of age to be able to hear some things. And
it mentions grandchildren.
Yeah. So she still could be pretty young, right? Could be 20s, could be 30s. We don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. We don't know how old grandchildren are. Maybe they're babies. Yeah. Maybe they're somewhere in there. She's an adult, we're going to assume. Yes.
Right.
And but good point. Yeah. So I think that there is a point in time where it's okay to have a more candid conversation with a child if you've been through a divorce. And it's not to say, hey, I'm going to just spew everything that went on, but how about setting up a time that says, hey, I'd like to get a little bit more real with you about what my experience was. And I honor that you have your own perception. This is what she should be telling her daughter. I honor that you have your own perception. I honor that you have your own experience. If you're at all interested, I'd love to be able to share with you a little bit more about my experience. And most importantly, I don't want that to get between us. I don't know why you can't have the relationship you want to have with your dad and still have a relationship with me. Can we work on creating the boundary between us that we are our own entity, that we don't have to be the entity of you, your dad, and me, but it's you and I have an identity as a relationship, and you and your dad have that. And I don't know what kind of relationship is it's cordial or not that she has with her ex. Hopefully it is, but I think that it's important sometimes to share a little bit more if the daughter's willing. So you actually present that, you create space for that. You create an invitation for that to see if there's some possibility of a little bit more healing in that department.
I like it. I'm glancing over at the time and we've only got about 3 minutes.
No, so fast.
Well, I know, and it went way too fast, but a few things. One is that I'd love to have you back because I actually fought myself from going off in so many different directions of things that I'd love to talk to you about, but I wanted to stay closer to the focus of this particular book. So I'd love to have you back because there's so much more I think we could go into. But let's kind of close with what message do you hope readers take away from Sassy and Rude, Her New Attitude? And explain maybe how they'll be able to start implementing these changes in their lives right away.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think that the message that I really want to convey is hope. And it's not always hope for a better relationship with one daughter, because we can't control that. We can influence, like I said earlier, we can put things in the mix, ingredients to hopefully have more sugar and spice. And delight in that, but it's the hope that we can heal ourselves in this process. And if we are sitting around, as many moms are, wounded birds, right? I'm so wounded. My daughter doesn't want to talk to me. She's not the same as she was with me when she was in middle school or when she was 10. She's just changed. I never forget the day that my daughter was 12 and she said, "I'm never moving out." I'm like, okay, can we write that down? I just really want to hear that. I want to be able to present that to you. At 18, man, she was out as fast as she could go, and she graduated high school. Great. So the idea is hope for oneself to be able to heal mm-hmm. our own wounds, to be able to become more whole, more self-compassionate, self-loving, get rid of this blame shame game, be responsible and accountable, and be able to share that so you get to be your best self. And by the way, that's attractive. So if mm-hmm. your daughter doesn't want some of that, I'd be surprised.
That's a great point. I love it. Deborah, thank you so much. And not just for coming on, but for putting the books that you've put out. I had a chance to go through a few of them because I wanted to get a better fix on you. And although I did not read all of this particular book, what I did read, I felt wasn't just mother-daughter. I felt things that were just relationship, you know, to where it would be, hey, I could use this with my own kids, or I could use this with my own, you know, the love of my life or whatever. You know, it's okay. There's a lot of things that work here that I think are beyond just the mother-daughter relationship. And thank you for that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, so pick up a copy at Amazon.com. And I hope people will visit my website also at drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com, and find out more about me and my practice and all that stuff. And it's such a pleasure to be here. I you know, we've been fellow radio show hosts for all those years in studio and never came across each other. That's beautiful that we could today.
Absolutely. And I look forward to fixing that by getting together again and sharing some more great stories. And again, for everybody out there, if you're driving and you weren't able to write any of that down, again, and the book is more than just Amazon, if I'm not mistaken, right? You can get it most anywhere?
Any online sellers, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's out there for everybody. And we'll put it all in the show notes as well. So not only how to get the book, but also how to reach Dr. Deborah, because again, she has a full practice and helps people in many different ways. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you. What a beautiful time together. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at Answers Network, or just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and many other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. I'm not one that understands algorithms real well, but I know that if you leave a review or you leave a comment, it helps us and it helps the people that are looking for something. The next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or X, please remember, stop by our page. Check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.